this week on The Future of Sex.
So basically, someone can buy a doll and they can buy multiple faces for their doll and very easily switch the face.
I gotta tell you something, man. Now, you've seen rubber blow-up inflatable dolls?
This is not a rubber doll.
This is really good.
What we're doing is developing an app that will allow a user to create sort of a custom personality profile for an artificial intelligence.
For those of you who have no clue what we're talking about, I ordered a real doll several weeks ago. The owner of the company was nice enough to give us one for free, believe it or not. It usually costs about $4,000 or $5,000.
Well, you lucked out.
I sure did. I am dying to see this thing and how realistic everybody is.
Is it important to you that she be pretty?
Yes. Well, of course. If I'm paying $4,000 or $5,000, I want a pretty loved doll. I don't want an ugly one.
You didn't pay anything.
Well, I'm saying, I would.
Hi, I'm Bryony, and welcome to another episode of Future of Sex, the podcast that explores the evolving worlds of sex and tech. Today on the show, we will be venturing out to the frontiers of robo-sexuality, understanding the potential roles AI and VR-enabled sex robots will have on our future. I'll be interviewing Matt McMullen, founder of Real Dolls, and I'll also have some special announcements about a free course and workshop, which I'll be talking about at the end of the podcast. So stay tuned. But before we get started, as usual, I just want to remind you this podcast contains explicit language and adult themes. So make sure you've got headphones in if there are little ones around. Real Dolls has been selling a doll a day, every day, for the last 20 years. Matt McMullen started this company in his garage, and it has since grown to a full-scale operation that in 2017 will also include artificial intelligence and virtual reality. While the realistic-feeling human skin-type dolls have been around for a while, the personality and emotional attachment of AI in these dolls is taking it a lot closer to Westworld's robotic sexual revolution. So, should we be excited, afraid, or both?
My name is Matt McMullen, and I am the creator of Real Doll. I've been doing this for about 20 years, and over the last 5 years, we've started experimenting and doing some research and development into incorporating some cutting-edge technology into our dolls, including artificial intelligence, robotics, and virtual reality.
Amazing. Well, that's all the points that I would love to dive into. So tell me more about where the cutting-edge technology is taking us.
I think one of the key components here that sort of chains everything together is the artificial intelligence. And basically what we're doing is developing an app that will allow a user to create sort of a custom personality profile for an artificial intelligence. Take the options that we present to them and create this virtual companion that they can then talk to and interact with. And over time, those interactions will actually modify the personality as she kind of gets to know you better.
Is it just she's at this stage? Is it just female?
Well, the basis of the AI is really rather genderless, to be honest. So there are key components that will sort of define it as male or female. But at this point, the introductory version of this will be female, as most of our dolls are female. We do males as well, and plan to do a male version of the AI. In addition to the original female.
That's so interesting. So when you're talking about sort of you're talking to your, do you call it a real doll or what is the term for these companions?
Well, yeah, they would still be more or less a real doll. The project we've named Realbotics, which is, you know, sort of encompassing all of these newer technologies that we're you know, interfacing into the real dolls. But the, you know, essentially you're still talking about a real doll. It's just that we're going to add the ability of a user to create an AI, and then that AI can be connected to the robotic components that we're going to be introducing for the dolls, including animated head with facial expression, eye movement. We're going to have face tracking, facial recognition, and the AI will actually be able to perceive through cameras the surrounding environment and will behave accordingly. So the AI would be able to recognize, you know, for example, I'm in a bedroom or I'm on a street corner. And those kinds of information can sort of dictate the behavior of the AI and the discussion of conversation or what have you that's going on at the time.
That's incredible. I imagine you're blowing so many people's minds with this. How do you sort of program it? Like what are sort of the options you have, and how does the personality develop or show over time?
Well, essentially you're going to be presented with a group of personality types or personality traits, such as outgoing versus shy, or, you know, good sense of humor versus little sense of humor, or a very sexual personality or very non-sexual. And so by picking these traits, and you only have, you know, so much flexibility there because you end up with some traits that are more dominant than others. And by selecting those traits, you've sort of created the foundation for your AI. From that point, you will be able to then further customize it by manipulating the voice itself. Eventually, we will offer multiple languages, and you can then create an on-screen avatar that you can see on your tablet or phone. And you will be interacting with this AI that you've created. And over time, the AI will learn things about you. It will learn, you know, your favorite foods, your where you were born, your, you know, things about your likes and dislikes, what's your favorite color, what's your favorite food, you know, little details. And I think those little things go a long way because when you're having subsequent conversations, those things can come up. You know, you can say, well, I was thinking maybe we, you know, could go eat pizza tonight. And then the AI would say, well, I thought your favorite food was hamburgers. Why do you want pizza? You know, just it creates sort of this level of believability in your conversations.
Where did the inspiration come to build something like this? Was there a particular moment?
No, I think it's always been sort of an underlying obvious sort of direction that we needed to go. But it was only in the last few years that some of this technology is becoming more accessible and more capable of doing some of the things that we'd like it to do. So there was always this idea of, wouldn't it be cool to take these dolls to another level and give them, you know, some sort of intelligence or sentience and give them the ability to actually talk and communicate. And, you know, not to mention all of the clients over the years that bring this up as well. You know, it's a very common, very frequently requested sort of thing, as you know, as far as, when are you guys going to incorporate robotics? When are you going to incorporate artificial intelligence?
How clunky is it right now? Like, do you still feel like people can, you know, does it still feel very sort of, I don't guess clunky is the word, like, you know, still early days?
Right. I mean, certainly we are starting from, I think that collectively artificial intelligence is really in its infancy and probably will be for some time. But I have been very pleasantly surprised with the experience of talking to the AI, specifically when it's actually connected to a lifelike doll. So, you know, it's one thing to, say, chat with an AI over a computer, where you're just typing. And then you go up a level when you add in the ability of speech recognition. So you're no longer typing, you're talking, and then you're hearing words come back. And then you go up yet another level when you add some kind of a graphical representation of the avatar that you're talking to, or the AI. So then you see this sort of face on the screen, you're hearing a voice, and these little incremental changes bring that experience up a notch. And what I've noticed is when we actually connect all of this to an animated doll, and you're seeing her mouth move, you're seeing her face kind of turn and make expressions, and her eyes are blinking, it kind of transcends the basis of what you're actually doing as far as, you know, this conversation you're having. It takes it to this different level because you have a physical presence in the room next to you, and she's moving and she's sort of animated, and it's a very difficult to explain and singular experience to actually communicate with something like this. I think it's pretty cool.
It's so futuristic. I think it's in everyone's, well, majority of people's wildest fantasies. How long do you think before people are going to be putting this in their homes?
Well, we're intending to release the app itself first, and that will probably come around April this year, 2017. And then by the end of 2017, we're going to start releasing the robotic components, the animated heads, which will probably come in different formats. So we'll have like a basic version that maybe does some limited movement, and then we'll have a more in-depth deluxe version that has onboard cameras, full articulation, and some things that the basic one wouldn't have. But essentially we're hoping to have a working robotic system with the AI and everything else by the end of 2017 for people to actually start ordering.
It's incredible. And then so with the head that you're describing, does that, it's going to sound weird, but screw on to another body?
Yeah, so the head is actually connected to almost any of our existing Real Doll bodies. Mm-hmm. Very, very easy. It's just a little adapter that someone would attach to a Real Doll body, and it's held on magnetically. So it just kind of snaps into place, and you get the full experience from there. So what we're giving people is a very high degree of customization when it comes to what do they want their robot to look like. And essentially, we're hoping to be able to offer similar options than as we do with the dolls themselves, with multiple faces, different skin colors, mm-hmm. Customizable makeup. You pick the hair you want. And, you know, given all those options, you can really come up with some amazing diversity in the appearance of the dolls.
I'd love to talk a bit about that because I've done some research on the dolls, and it seems like you guys, you're sort of leading the way in customization, like you're the most customizable dolls that anyone could possibly buy at this point. Am I right?
Yes, you're correct. We've always, our model has always been sort of giving people the tools to build the doll that they want, that they envision. By choosing from multiple different body types, multiple different faces, and then you get to sort of choose the skin color, what kind of makeup she has, the eye color, even the manicure and pedicure color, and then some, because some people come up with things that maybe are not traditionally options in our ordering process, but we're more than happy to accommodate special requests like that.
I mean, customization is the future for everything, right? Like, we're getting so sophisticated that you can really 3D print anything that you want. I wonder if at some point we'll be 3D printing or printing our robot companions in our own home.
Well, potentially, there will probably be ways where people could 3D print components for their dolls or replacement parts even for the robotics themselves, but much of what you see in terms of the aesthetics of the dolls is very much artwork. A lot of the parts are very much traditionally made by sculpting and molding and casting and detailing by hand. And I don't see a lot of that becoming super automated to where, a face could just like appear on a platform in someone's house. I mean, at least not at this stage in the technological capabilities of what we have. But you never know. That could be a potential pathway in the future.
What's the demand like for changing up the look of your real doll? Do people sort of, you know, can they change the manicure? Do they tend to just get one? I'm so curious as to the sort of habits, consumer behavior.
Well, we have one of the biggest and I think coolest things that we have exclusively is our interchangeable faces. We have a patent on it. So basically, someone can buy a doll and they can buy multiple faces for their doll and very easily switch the face. So that to me is like one of the biggest ways that we see clients changing the looks of their dolls by, you know, taking their existing doll and exchanging the face and putting different hair on it. You've essentially almost created a new character altogether. So that's one of the big things. Beyond that, we do have a fair amount of people who are very, very particular about, you know, the choices that they're going to make with their doll in so far as the details, the color, the makeup. We get a lot of people ordering custom eyes even after the fact to be able to change the eyes in their dolls. And that's really kind of always been our business model is just offering as many possible options as possible and making them very user-friendly for people to change in their own homes.
Mm-hmm. How many dolls are bought a year? Is it a growing trend?
I would estimate probably about a doll a day, and it's been pretty steady since we started about 20 years ago. I started this company in my garage in a very small house in the middle of nowhere, and it very, very quickly grew when Howard Stern heard about it or found it, and that was really kind of a springboard for us as far as, you know, being sort of out there for everyone to hear about. But it very quickly went from a one-man operation in a garage to actually having to get a manufacturing facility and hiring people and, you know, doing all the fun stuff that's involved with running a company.
Totally. And as technology has changed so much, it sounds like you guys have kept up with the AI and the VR aspects of things as well. Like you've been running that race as fast as the other sort of tech companies.
Well, I think that we came up with a really solid concept as far as how we could utilize some of those technologies. Something like robotics is really cool, and people love to, you know, hear about robots and watch, maybe shows about them. But what are the robots for is the big question. And, you know, further than that, what is a human-like robot for? Why would a robot that's designed to do something like clean your house need to look like a human? It doesn't. Why would a robot that's designed to be a teacher need to look like a human? It doesn't. But something like this that's designed to be a companion and designed to really kind of connect with people, it really lends itself well to have that robot look human and sort of behave as a human. And you know, this project that we're engaging in is so much more than a sex robot, which is what everyone sort of focuses on. It's really more about companionship, and I feel very strongly that some of the fundamental technologies that we're working with could be used for benefit of a lot of people. For even in care facilities, it could be used for a virtual secretary when you come into an office building, stuff like that, well beyond the sexual aspect. So I hope that one day people will recognize that and be able to sort of look beyond that sort of concept that everyone jumps into real quickly, which is the sex.
Totally. I mean, we've seen examples of the robotics being used for care in elderly homes, but with I forget the name, but it's the seal doll. Have you seen the doll that looks like a seal?
I'm talking about Paro, the furry seal.
I have. Actually, I had the benefit of, I actually got to check one of those out at the CES last year.
Oh, how was it?
And it was really cool. And it really kind of it makes you recognize some of the fundamental traits that we as humans have, and that because this thing kind of really was very cute and it was fuzzy and soft, and it really kind of reminded you very much of holding an animal, and it brings out behaviors in you. And when I saw it, I was like, wow, that's really amazing, because you can't really describe the experience until you actually have it in your hand and you're looking at it. And you realize, you know, it's really kind of connected to what we're doing, which is, you know, creating this wholly different experience that's never been possible before.
Sure, robo-sex is not a new phenomenon, but I think the difference is today we know more about how we react and develop behaviours in response to interacting with this sort of technology. For example, soldiers have been studied interacting with bomb disposal robots and shown to develop very strong emotional connections, often crying and holding funerals for them when they're destroyed. And of course, Paro, the robotic furry seal that responds to voice and touch, is currently used in retirement homes to help with loneliness and communication. We know we have this tendency to anthropomorphise robots, just like we do with our pet dog or the Easter Bunny. And the more we create these robot dolls with human characteristics, features that respond to body language and maintain eye contact, the harder it's going to be not to view AI robot dolls as actual living beings. AI dolls can create a very real, visceral reaction in us, what some of us would call a real head fuck. And here we have the opportunity to bridge fantasy and reality, to indulge whims, no matter how dark or perverse, without the repercussions that exist in reality. But because it feels so close to reality, there's a chance we may not be able to separate ourselves from it entirely. I mean, if it feels real, how much of it can we leave behind when we put the technology down? I am curious on the sexual side of things, if our sexual tastes are going to change too and move more towards perhaps being more attracted to things that look more robotic. What do you think about that?
I look at it in a very similar way as I would to, say, vibrators. You know, for women, you know, to be using vibrators is now kind of accepted, like, okay, no big deal. But I think, you know, if you were to go back in time to sort of when that whole thing was originated, and if we had the sort of social media connectivity that we do now, a lot of people may have been talking about vibrators and talking about how women aren't going to need men anymore, and what's this going to do to relationships. And I really kind of look at it the same way. I look at these robots and the AI itself not as a replacement for human connection, but as an alternative. And I think there will be those who will choose to experience these types of relationships over a traditional human-human relationship for their own reasons. And, you know, that could be a multitude of reasons. But primarily, I think it's more of an alternative and more of something that people might want to try out, that they might want to experience, but not necessarily something that will all of a sudden be predominant, you know, that people aren't, you know, having relationships anymore because there's robots. I think no matter how advanced we're able to make, you know, both the robot and the AI itself, you can never replace a real human connection.
And there's lots of panic about that. I mean, we see this over and over again, whether it's vibrators, whether it's porn, and the porn panic of like, oh my God, it's going to be a revolution and everyone will be, you know, never connect again in person. And now it's definitely with the fact that this is more accessible, people are thinking, well, sex robots are going to remove any need for human-to-human connection and intimacy. And it's a great point.
Right. And, you know, I think a lot of that, some of the blame of that sort of symptom should kind of go on the media because, I mean, let's face it, a headline stating that sex robots are going to take over and traditional human relationships are going to start failing or start occurring less and less is a great headline. and people are going to read that. So, you get this kind of double-edged sword of, yes, that's a great headline, but is it really factually possible that that could happen? I mean, we've had a plethora of other things, sexually speaking, that have sort of popped up and become more mainstream and more accepted, and they haven't changed the course of traditional relationships. So, it's kind of like introducing some kind of crazy new food that no one's ever heard of and no one's ever eaten before, and then claiming that this food is now going to be the only food that anyone eats. That's, kind of a way of looking at it. I don't see that happening, and I think the people that are sort of ringing that alarm are perhaps just, not looking at this from a factual standpoint and looking at the reality of, how this is being created and why it's being created and who can benefit from it. That's really for me the question that needs to be asked.
So another thing I wanted to touch on in this field, which is driving a lot of fear and people either love or hate it, is virtual reality.
Oh yes. So basically, when we started creating this whole sort of concept and talking about what, let's create an AI, let's create a customizable AI that people can interact with, and let's give them the option of just interacting with it on their device, be it their tablet or their phone, or let's give them the option of connecting it to a robotic doll and interacting with her that way. And we started talking. I said, well, what about people who don't necessarily find the idea of a robot appealing, but they would like to have something more engaging than just talking to an AI on a smartphone? So that's where the idea of, hey, virtual reality would be really cool, to take this AI that you've created and then sort of, instead of connecting it to a robot, you connect it to a virtual reality environment, wherein you're able to create an even more realistic avatar than you would be, capable of doing on a tablet, using a full computer and putting a headset on and putting yourself in, any kind of environment than you can imagine, and then interacting with the AI much the same way as you would if it were connected to a robot.
Do you think there's going to be a different market that go for the virtual reality stuff versus what you've seen so far with real doll and like the physical aspect of it?
Well, that all remains to be seen. But I'm very curious about how well we're able to bridge those worlds together, and some of the concepts we've had are connected to maybe using a partial silicone doll. So that when the user in the virtual environment is touching his avatar in the virtual world, he will feel with his hands in the real world. Mm. And I think that is super important to really make that experience sort of full circle and give them as much stimulation on with as many of the senses as possible.
Yeah.
Conceptually, it sounds super solid, but technically, it's a very big challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So, we've really sort of, looked at the three aspects of what we're doing and decided let's release the app first and let the world start interacting with it and start polishing it from those interactions, because the more we hear from people what works, what doesn't work, we can make the AI better and better and better. So the development of the AI will continue even after it's released. And then we said, well, let's release the robot second. And third will be the VR, because it really is an enormous undertaking to create this really very captivating experience. I mean, everybody's sort of jumping on the VR bandwagon, but what you're getting is 360-degree footage or even a 360-degree 3D graphics created world that you can look around in. And the first thing I noticed was I can't touch anything. I can't see my hands. So I don't really feel like I'm here. And so that's where we're focusing our efforts, is on how can we bring these other senses into the VR to make that experience as cohesive as possible.
Is that the sort of craziest thing you're working on? What's after that,
Well, it's all crazy. I mean, sometimes I look in the mirror, like, what am I doing? This is so much work. It is a lot of work. It really is, technically. But I mean, from there, we're hoping to start working on animating parts of the body with the robot. Mm. We're looking at, you know, in any of these things, once they're sort of created in a fundamental way, I look at it as, okay, now we've gotten sort of proof of concept. We've gotten this stable platform. Now, how can we make it better? Mm-hmm. So I suspect there will be years and years and years of then improving on and redesigning and revisiting a lot of the fundamental things that we're putting into the technology right now and making them even better.
And I guess that's the exciting thing about sex tech. It's going to force us all to have these conversations with each other. It's going to make us all renegotiate what it means to be in partnership when we can visit virtual worlds, 3D print a partner, buy a robotic companion, or have intelligent, flirty conversations with an AI personality. So, what value do we give to our human relationships? What do humans give us that technology cannot? In an ideal future, I believe this technology will increase our desire for deeper human connections. It'll drive us to create stronger bonds and relearn how to cultivate intimacy that relies on our creativity, our imagination, intuition, and all those other characteristics of the right side of the brain that technology can't recreate, at least just yet. I think that'll be our point of difference in relationships when we're coming up against things like real dolls. And in fact, real dolls may be our wake-up call.
So the question that I end on with each interview is, and we include this in the quotes at the end, is just really broadly, beyond everything that you're working on, what do you think is the future of sex?
I think the future of sex has a lot to do with all of us learning to accept each other even more than we do now, mm-hmm. and continuing this sort of curve of understanding that everybody's different physically, mentally, and sexually. And by accepting each other's differences and maybe sort of almost allowing people to express those differences a little more and accepting them, I think that's going to ultimately help us grow as a species, both physically, mentally, and, of course, sexually.
Thanks for listening to Future of Sex, the podcast that explores the evolving worlds of sex and tech. Now, I'm currently down under in Australia at the Myriad Conference in Brisbane and will be visiting Melbourne next week to host a live Future of Sex show with four Aussie pioneers, including TED speaker Lucy McRae, sexual recovery coach and co-founder of the world's first sex toy design course, Victoria Cullen, founder of the Man Lab, Alex White, and host of the podcast All We Cannot Say, Camilla Pfeiffer. If you'd like to come along to the panel discussion next Tuesday, check out futureofsex.org/events and RSVP there, or head to General Assembly's Melbourne website. And I'll also be running a free podcasting nuts and bolts workshop in Melbourne. So if you've ever thought about starting a podcast, make sure you sign up for this. Email hello@futureofsex.org for more details, or send me a shout out on Twitter @BryonyCole, and I'll get you signed up for the free beginner session and you'll get podcasting in no time. And for all those listeners out there, I'd like to learn more about how I can help you. So what is the biggest thing you'd want me to teach you or create for you? What do you want to know more about? Shoot me an email, briony@futureofsex.org, and you'll not only get your question answered, but be in the running to receive a free swag bag from Future of Sex. As you can see, we are really ramping up the 2017. There's tons of good stuff coming. So if you have any questions or feedback or just want to keep up with what I'm doing, follow me on Twitter @BryonyCole or email me, briony@futureofsex.org. I'll be between America, Europe, and Australia this year. So if you have any events you'd like to see me at, workshop opportunities in your city, anything at all, let me know. And of course, if you want links to anything Matt talked about on today's episode, make sure you check out the episode show notes on futureofsex.org. And if you want to check out the other podcasts our editor Chad is producing, visit chadmichael.com. Until next week, I'll talk to you all soon. Thank you.